David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 338. I'm your delinquent host, Steve Raker, coming at you from the comic book bunker, where winter has hit. Although not in the bunker. It's the purpose of the bunker, to keep the outside out and keep the warm, fleshy inside in, right? And we've got Andrew the LA Rabbit, who has completely forgotten what winter is like.
And hey, I'll have you know, Steve, it has gotten down into the 50s, so we know very well what winter is like.
You might have to grab a jacket. And old man winter himself, Kevin, from up at the North Pole.
It's been weird.
I thought it was cold here, and then I looked at the temperatures where you were, and I'm like, all right, now that's cold.
It's not even winter yet. It's not winter cold yet. December, usually pretty good. You get into December, and you're like, oh, I can take this. And then once January hits, you're just like, it's cold.
We just got walloped with 24 inches of snow right after Thanksgiving, so we're feeling the winter onset quite quickly here at Marvel Noise Central. You can find Marvel Noise on Facebook and on Twitter. We have our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, that Andrew and Kevin have shepherded into many, many episodes. They are quite prolific over there, but I try to get on an episode or two when I can, and all of this happens under the warm embrace of the Deliberate Noise Network. All right, we retired to our corners for far longer than we anticipated to get worked on, you know, get a cut man in there and recover and convalesce and all that good stuff. But now we're coming out swinging, possibly blindly. So let's get right into it. Guys, it's been over a month since we've talked last. You must have read something. What have you guys been reading?
Well, to directly contradict you, Steve, I thought I would bring up something else, actually. Whoa. I don't know if you guys know, but ABC is running a big Stan Lee show on December 20th, like a celebrating Stan Lee.
Huh. Really?
I don't know. I don't think the American Broadcasting Company is showing things up in Canada, but hey, why not? So, Kevin, if you want to take a few laps or shovel the driveway while Steve and I talk about TV, I just wanted to say it looks kind of interesting. I'm always a little wary. It's being filmed in part and live in front of a studio audience. Of course, it's going to be heavy in your TV and movie stars. But they do say it does feature, you know, Joe Quesada, C.B. Cebulski, Todd McFarlane.
I was going to say Jerry McFarlane Conway. For sure, right? And I bet Kevin Smith, right? Somebody like that?
I mean, I'm leaving off like, you know, they say Tom Hiddleston, who played Yoloki, and Paul Bettany, The Vision, and like all the film and TV stars, they're important to get people in. But I don't think that they're reminiscence of the 10 minutes they met Stan, you know, like
right
on the set of the movie are quite the elements I'm interested in. They are teasing that they've found some rare interview footage and all that sort of stuff. But I know luckily YouTube has exposed me to tons of that stuff, which is the thing I'm going for.
Video where he's with Todd McFarlane and everything, give him art lessons. Just play that. That's
so great. But I wanted to throw that out for Marvel people and Marvel Noise listeners. Obviously, you'll have to check your local affiliate, but they're saying 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time, Friday, December 20th.
I hope on your
ABC affiliate. Is this episode going to be out by then?
I hope they do it like a stage show, like it's like a Bob Hope variety show, you know, and it's like totally campy, and the next person walks out from behind the curtain onto the stage. And
I agree. Well, I plan to probably not watch live, but throw it on the DVR. And that way, like I said, if I love those gems, there's a few nice ones of like when Stan tried some talk shows in the 60s and stuff you can find on YouTube. Uh-huh. And that kind of the older footage is what really I find more interesting, but you would think they would have access to all kinds of archives and everything. And you know, it's just nice to kind of have, it seemed like a cool holiday, like a real classic Marvel TV holiday special kind
sure.
of thing.
Father Christmas, Christmas with the Lees.
So, and besides, it'll put a timer on poor Steve. He'll have now have to get this episode out before. But anyways, wanted to throw that out for Marvel Noise fans, or if you want to just jeer at it or whatever, but it's it seemed pretty cool to me anyways, if you have the bandwidth. And sorry, Kevin, I don't know what they do in Canada. I think
it might be airing on the American Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that stuff gets up to Canada, by the way. Isn't that some kind of national security risk or whatever?
That's what Reddit's for.
No, what? What don't you you get the signal over the border from Buffalo or something?
Look at you smuggling our signals illegally across the way. No, I'm glad it's up there. Well, I just know we've talked about TV before, and obviously they sell the rights to different channels up there. So I don't know if it's going to be on one of your other channels.
If it's a regular show, it won't be.
Well, it's ABC, Disney, Marvel, so.
Well, that's what I mean. Maybe it'll be, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes, yeah. Andrew's been alluding to it, but yeah, sometimes things get weird. Like, where they'll be something, and then you'll be like, you know, something will be on Netflix instead of on, like, where it's supposed to be. It does happen.
And I also enjoy that it's ABC News celebrating Marvel's Stan Lee. Like, they couldn't just go with celebrating Stan Lee. Like, we're not going to apparently talk about his reimagining of the DC character.
Get Jim Lee on there to talk about that. That would be great.
We're not going to talk about Stripperella or any of his other groundbreaking outside the Marvel context work, I guess is what that is. But yeah, Stan Lee.
Talk about all his cameos.
And in somewhat related news, and we don't need to beat this dead horse, I did sign up, I think I mentioned, at the D3 Expo for 3 years worth of Disney Plus. And in the Marvel Direct related content, I have started rewatching the old Spider-Woman cartoon, which I did not remember. It was fun. I liked that they had Spider-Man appear on an episode. It's much, I believe, chronologically, it's after that classic 60s Spider-Man series, but it retains much of the same flavor. What I'm doing is I'm not binging it. I would suggest doing like me and kind of one episode here and then another episode a little later because it's very formulaic. But I'm recently, the last episode I left off on featured the Kingpin, guys, the Kingpin. And my favorite gimmick was he's always eating, but it's always fruit and vegetables. So he'll have, like, a big thing of celery in his hand or an apple.
that's Vanessa, you know, pushing the grains.
But I was like, I like that. You know, us fat guys getting representation that we don't just eat donuts and candy bars. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, Andrew, that cartoon was from the, like, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends time.
The animation feels a little, I would be willing to say it's a little bit before that. But I love the Spider-Woman's great. Her character's great. She's cool. The voice actress. I could.
And that costume. Drop, come on, Andrew, that I costume.
I could drop the little kid sidekick, her nephew, and the creepy boyfriend. So the three of them. The other thing, at least up to date, I don't like that Jessica in her outfit as head of Justice Magazine.
Yes, I agree. I was just going to
say. Wears the same outfit.
Yep, and I just don't like their portrayal of Jessica. Like, I don't like the Jessica side of things much at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, look, you run a big magazine. Like, why does the magazine need to have a jet copter? Like, shouldn't you have more responsible cost controls? And we wonder why print is dead. I'm just saying, a jet copter seems unnecessary for a news magazine.
Just put on the mask and go get the Kingpin a salad, would you?
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, check out the first one because it's Spider-Man or the one where she faces the Kingpin. Two fun episodes. Well, I'm going to watch them all just maybe not binge them back to back because you will get tired of the fact they are all the same. It always has to end with her acting dumb in Jessica Drew form so that the photographer and nephew don't suspect that she's really Spider-Woman.
Maybe you should have got the Kingpin some Hostess fruit pies.
That always does the trick. Or a Twinkie. When that fails. Also in the spider world, I remember when we last talked, or the time before that, when we were talking about our recent reads, Andrew, I think I remember you specifically saying that you were not necessarily thumbing your nose and boycotting reading Absolute Carnage, the Spider-Man Venom Carnage event that's been going on since early August and only just ended in late November. So it's run through the end of the summer all the way through the fall.
Oh, he was thumbing.
Well, I think it was more like with all the tie-ins in there. I mean, there were a lot of tie-ins, guys. This covered, and what I'm getting to the point, though, is that I got your back, and I did the hard work for you, and I'm going to tell you what to read and what not to read here.
Oh, good. I do plan on grabbing it on Unlimited. I had just come off a couple of pretty heavy buying sprees, and I felt that maybe Carnage wasn't the sort of timeliness, the sort of thing I had to need to read at that moment as it was coming out to be part of the conversation. And it was also a character that I have no problem with, but I have no affinity. Carnage is one of those 90s things that seems like a great idea, but just isn't my, you know, I don't have any love for the guy or anything.
Ditto. But for the Absolute Carnage event, you have but to read the Absolute Carnage series itself, 5 issues by writer Donnie Cates, with art by Ryan Stegman and J.P. Mayer. The tie-in issues of Venom, from which the Absolute Carnage storyline spawned, pun intended, issues 17 to 20, also by Cates, with art by Iben Coelho. And then, yeah, it's worthwhile to read the 2 Amazing Spider-Man issues by Nick Spencer, Ryan Otley, and Cliff Rathburn, issues 30 and 31. But yeah, there are a lot of tie-ins, guys. There's side series. There's Absolute Carnage Scream, 4 issues, which is the old female symbiote spawn from Venom Lethal Protector way back in the 90s. There's Absolute Carnage Miles Morales. There's Absolute Carnage Lethal Protectors that does the street-level heroes. Iron Fist, Cloak and Dagger, you know the type. Morbius the Vampire thrown in there too, since they're going to be relaunching a new book with him soon. And Absolute Carnage Deadpool. You can skip all those. The additional one-shots, there's Absolute Carnage, Separation Anxiety, Symbiote of Vengeance, which is just an excuse to keep, like, bridge the new Ghost Rider series with his appearances in the Avengers, which I'll get to later. There's Symbiote Spider-Man, there's Avengers, there's an Immortal Hulk, and there's a Captain Marvel one-shot tie-in. The Cat gets a symbiote in the Captain Marvel one. Who would have guessed, right?
Oh, I did buy my comic book shop guy did say, get the Immortal Hulk one, because I've been buying Immortal Hulk. So I did buy one of the tie-ins.
Yeah, that's the one I bought too.
But really what you need is just the Absolute Carnage itself and Venom. And the Venom stuff was the good stuff for me, was in that book that kept bouncing out of the material in Absolute Carnage and kind of giving more of the story, if you will. But the basic plot is something, it's like reminiscent of the Armor Wars storyline from Iron Man in the late 80s, where Iron Man, you know, he hunted down and took back, like, modified versions of Stark tech from villains that were using it, like, in their armor. So he went around to, like, armored villains to take back his armor, you know? Or more recently in Mark Waid and Jerry Duggan's Hulk book from 2014, where the Hulk hunted down all of the other gamma irradiated characters and, like, cured them whether they wanted to be cured or not. Except for She-Hulk, because she always wore it so well, right? And, well, in Absolute Carnage is seeking out symbiote codexes or like small traces of genetic material that are residing in every individual who's ever worn a symbiote, which turns out there's a lot, right? And so he's taking them back, and he evolves with each addition to himself. And it's all tied into the recent Venom mythology that the planet of the symbiotes from way back in that summer special event from the 90s. The planet
super
of the...
Super special.
Yeah, there were a couple of super specials. There was like a Spider-Man super special and a Peter Parker Spider-Man super special, spectacular. And they were all in the summer, and they weren't the annuals. They were super specials, but they were all the planet of the symbiote story. And it was the first time you got to see that there was like a Venom planet, right? But here what Cates is saying in the Venom's mythology that's going on now is that the planet of the symbiotes is really just a conglomeration of symbiotes, like a big giant scab, if you will, that's just coagulating around this imprisoned evil godlike being who's called Null. Null with a K. And he's trying to make a comeback. So he's been influencing things in Venom, and he's trying to escape.
So is he like Curse with a K, Steve?
Yeah, right? So he's going to use Carnage as his minion to collect all this genetic information together into becoming one supreme symbiote that can use the power of the symbiote hive mind or whatever's left in it and overpower that planet full of them and release this evil godlike being. And Eddie Brock is trying to prevent it.
If they brought Conan up, couldn't they bring King Kull up, Steve? Kull versus Null?
There you go. But Carnage is on the hunt with this near godlike power, and he gets more and more skeletal and evolved as it goes on, which is creepy. I mean, they keep horror elements throughout the series, which is kind of cool. There's a scene where there's like a prison full of like Carnage minions that are all coming after Spider-Man and Venom that are trapped in there. So there's that whole like being trapped in the tunnel with the rat horde kind of thing. And you get Norman Osborn being turned into a Carnage acolyte. You get the hero's base being infiltrated by Carnage at a time where they were like licking their wounds and thought that they were like had a peaceful moment in a safe house. And it's like, nope, Carnage is there. And all of a sudden they're getting attacked and stuff. And there's like, it's a bit of a Stranger Things kind of an ending. That's a little bit of a Deus Ex Machina, but you know, it's a comic book story for Pete's sake. But what I really like, the charm of it, and what I think you should read, even if you're not going to read the Absolute Carnage stuff, is to read the Venom issues. Issue 17 through 20, because there's this little side thing that's going on that was the most entertaining thing to me. In Venom, in Cates' Venom, the Maker has been making a lot of appearances. And that time the pun wasn't intended. But the Maker is the Ultimate Universe's Reed Richards, who has the deformed head. And so he's wearing the big helmet, and all you can see is like his like evil smirk smile kind of a thing. And, you know, he's smart and evil like Reed would be, but he has sort of set up shop in the Venom book, and he has been studying Venom and working for a clandestine yet unrevealed group, let's say, which gets revealed at the end of this, and it was kind of cool. And he has been being used sort of as a scientific helper for Venom and for Eddie Brock. Something's going on, somebody's sick, the Venom symbiote's doing something. He goes to the Maker, and the Maker's collecting data for his own sinister purposes, which Venom understands that he's probably not, you know, this is going to come back to bite him, but he needs, like, you know, stitches now or whatever the case may be. But so what's cool about these Venom issues of Absolute Carnage is that Eddie Brock has a kid who doesn't know that he's Eddie's kid, and Eddie didn't know he had a kid, and he's like, I don't know, he seems like he's like 10 or 11, 12 years old, maybe something like that. And he's thinks he's like his younger brother or he's his friend or something along. I forget what the kid thinks, but Eddie knows it's his kid. And he knows that the kid has some codec in him and that Carnage is going to come after him. So he's trying to keep him safe. Similarly, Spider-Man is trying to keep little Normie, Norman Osborn's grandson, Harry and Liz Allen's son. He also, I guess, has a codex in him or something. I don't remember that specifically, but for whatever reason, Spider-Man's trying to keep him safe too. So they got these two kids, and what they do is they bring them to the Maker. And then they go off on a reconnaissance mission. All right, and so it's the two kids, the two 10-year-olds there with the evil Reed Richards, and the interplay between them, and then they get attacked by a bunch of symbiotes, so you get to see like the Maker's defenses and how he would defend the kids even though he doesn't really care about kids, and you can see that he's even willing to kill a kid at one point, not one of those kids, but all that stuff is funny. And even when he's like describing a bunch of machinery as Reed Richards would do, like it does all these crazy things, and like the kids are all stuck on trying to make an acronym out of it, and he's and it's like frustrating Reed, like he's like, you know, and machines don't have to have names, you know. They just have to do stuff. But that stuff was really, really entertaining to me, and it in some ways I think has been one of my favorite things about the Venom book and about Cates's treatment of the Venom stuff. Which is funny because I don't like the Ultimate Universe stuff in the Marvel Universe, but between the helmet and his creepy, smiling, evil affect, they've made him not read enough so that I don't mind seeing kind of how he's operating and what he's going to do. And now that at the end of this whole thing where they reveal who he's working for or trying to impress, I'm twice as intrigued, because it's fun stuff that harkens back to the Hickman Fantastic Four stuff.
Yeah, in the old days, you just slap a goatee on, and we know which one was evil Reed.
Yeah, but now really, regular Reed has a mustache and exactly. Goatee, so what are you going to do?
I did pick up that Morbius the Living Vampire number one.
Any good?
The Vita Aea Marcello Ferreira Roberto Poggi. I like all these. I would probably say, and this might be heresy, but I kind of want to see this when it comes to Marvel Unlimited, because it's set, the opening scene has a nighttime warehouse setup that I feel, at least in my print copy at times, is pretty dark. And I don't mean tonally. I mean, tonally it's somewhat dark too, but visually, I feel like, and this comes up with me once in a while, I oftentimes wonder if they sort of set these things more for digital now than for print.
Yeah.
Because when it's the guy in black clothes running through a black warehouse,
well, that's
parts of it are fairly obscured.
That's the problem with the glossy paper, right? I mean, the shiny paper, you can't get a real black because you got the reflectivity of the light. That's where you need that matte. That's where that newsprint was.
Yes.
Even though the black was gray, you know?
Yeah, or blue. Well, the setup is somewhat interesting. They have the Melter running a gang, but they've done the Melter as like a skinny guy, and his little melting eye, it looks like it's on a necklace, kind of like Flava Flav or something. And he's experimenting, and Morbius comes and is picking his crew off. But with one of those, they make him look real bloodthirsty and nasty, but with some throwaway line about, oh, I left him alive so they'd be afraid. You know, that comic book classic thing where they have to explain that, like, it's horrific, but it was interesting having the Melter as the bad guy. So Morbius, in this instance, is still looking for the cure. So he's shutting down the Melter and his gang because they're bad, but he's also stealing their supplies because he wants to fix his condition. Like, that's the old-timey. I remember when one of the Marvel Now or Marvel Right Now or Marvel Presents or Marvel Presents Now or Don't Wait Later Marvel had a Morbius series that ran about 9 to 12 issues or so that I liked. But I realized I think I'm a little bit stuck in time with the character. Like, I remember him with six arms Spidey. And I probably have done a disservice by not respecting his 90s adventures in any meaningful way. So for me, to whatever extent his 90s are influencing the modern character, it's a little lost on me.
The six-armed Spidey, that was his first appearance. Morbius' first appearance ever. So if you're having trouble getting away from that one, then you're missing everything that's happened. But, you know, that 70s stuff is where I think of Morbius, too. But there was more than just those couple of Spidey appearances, as I'm going to touch upon in an upcoming episode when I finally finish up the Human Torch Marvel team-up stuff. He had his second big storyline was in Marvel Team Up, and then from there he goes on and he has the Marvel Magazine stuff.
Yes, but that kind of very 70s kind of tragic monster storyline that you can go all the way back to like Frankenstein or whatever. To, you know what I mean? Like, he's inflicted with this curse, bad things happen, and he sometimes does bad things, but he's a good guy type of storyline, where I'm sure in the 90s he more embraced his bad boyness. I can't imagine.
Hey, he was a Midnight Sun, for crying out loud. Hey, you know when you were saying before about how nobody, you know, they have to show that the people live afterwards. The first time as a kid that I really noticed that as being, oh, that must be like an editorial mandate, wasn't even in comic books, but in TV with the A-Team. I'd be like nudging my friend, like, look, nobody dies. They never shoot guns. They'll shoot, like, you know, farm produce out of cannons, but, like, they never shoot bullets, and nobody ever dies. They always show them getting out of the truck after it crashes. Pretty funny.
Yeah, so that part didn't particularly bother me in any way, and there is a guest appearance by someone who I only have a theory about because they don't name her. But I think I know who it's supposed to be. But I wouldn't have minded throwing a name out. And she's going to team up with the Melter to go after Morbius. And his attempt to cure himself doesn't seem to work very well, as you might have. You know, that's pretty typical. Like the old Hulk one. You know, you're trying, and it works for, or Ben Grimm, it works for like half an issue. And then, oh no, the formula isn't taking place. Because obviously if he cures himself, it's a big problem for the story going forward. But as noted, while I enjoyed the art and the storytelling was clear and all that, I'm very curious to see this on digital to see if it's just as kind of, I don't even want to say muddy, but just black on black on black, or if that really comes through. Because you know, on a digital, that stuff you can really sometimes make out a lot, in my opinion, a lot more than when you're reading it on, like you say, the glossy paper.
Sure.
But yeah, Morbius the Living Vampire with the Melter with his little clock around his neck and everything and pontificating on his thought. And it also made me laugh because I'm like, what a perfect, like a classic Marvel villain, but not a heavy hitter in most people's books. Here's where I'm waiting for Kevin to lambast me on the rich tradition of the Melter.
No, when you said the Melter has a gang, I was like, really? The Melter's smart enough to have a gang? he's not my... I never thought of him as much of a leader. That doesn't mean he didn't take some after-school classes and
skills. They're not superpowered. They're all just, you know, guys with guns and stuff to run his crew, that type of thing. But yeah, you're right. I don't picture him as an organizer.
I mean, that's a decent skill, though, melting things. Like, that's handy.
Yeah. When you're fighting Iron Man, it sure is.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like...
my transistors!
Spot Pete. Like, some paste is useful. Melting stuff is useful. You know, it's around that level of usefulness.
You mean the greatest character design ever? He looks like a French painter, and he carries his paint in a bucket.
I liked how they
Sure he's not Parafino from the Spider-Man cartoon?
Like how when they first depicted him, like the bucket didn't even have a top on it. It was just like an open bucket.
He has confidence in his abilities, gentlemen. Style counts for something in the world.
Yeah, you swing that bucket around and, like, the centrifugal force holds the, you know, material right in it, so.
Sorry he's not wearing, like, an all-gray, black leather battle outfit ready for the movies, but...
With a lot of pockets.
He's got style. I also, in the Spider-Man world, picked up The Amazing Mary Jane. One and two. Are you guys picking up this series?
No.
No.
All right.
Mysterio's cool, but it's like, it's you know, I don't think...
Give me a reason to.
Carlos. Yeah. That's the reason to do it. Carlos Gomez and Carlos Lopez. They can white out the word balloons as far as I'm concerned. I really feel like the two Carloses are hitting on a fun visual style.
Oh, cool.
The thin premise is Mary Jane's out filming a movie. Spoiler, it's one of the 900 Mysterios who's behind it. But he's trying to do it legitimately to tell his story because he's an artist. And so it's the... This plot would have worked in the 60s. Unfortunately, telling it in the modern era, like, I don't think decompressing those kind of goofy stories is great, because part of their charm is it's a silly premise. And I think sometimes having these sillier premises trying to blown out in a longer format is a little rough, but I just really like the artwork. It's a mix of her... In the filming scenes, you know, there's the action. And then the rest of the time, the team does a great job of, like, the interactions and having Mary Jane chatting with the different people and running around. And some of the other issue is some of the humor isn't really for me. Like, they run out of money, and so they're going to get money from other Hollywood. So, and it's just a lot of, like, the same kind of, no offense to... Leia Williams, but I don't think it's like biting satire to be like, oh, look at the crazy creative types in Hollywood, and like just the kind of tired stereotypes that we saw in the 60s. You know what I mean? Like, didn't we already read this comic when it was Spider-Man getting tricked into filming something? But that being said, I'm going to keep on it because I just love the artwork. And the playful nature of the story matches their tone excellently. They do the action scenes great, and they do the talking scenes great, and it's a great Mary Jane. I just think it's really fun, and I don't... I think we've talked about this before, how I can read comics where I really dig the art, but the writing is so-so, but it's a bit harder. Not that I haven't, but if I really love the writing, I just feel like if the art is... I mean, I've read some comics. I don't even understand some of the panel sequences, and it will just completely derail it. So this is one I'm 100% on board for the art only. And I don't mind the story or anything. I just feel like it's not making fun of Hollywood. Like, you can do that, but maybe bring something fresher to the making fun of it than what I've currently seen out of the first two issues.
I'm having that trouble with the Tony Stark Iron Man book with the with Slott. That it's like, you know, I figured he's got a story he wants to tell, right? He's taken over writing Iron Man or whatever. And I'm really having trouble every time. Even when there's something, story elements that seems like it would interest me, and I jump back in and check out an issue or two, especially recently, there's this whole Ultron thing going on, and the Wasp and Jocasta and Brides of Ultron and that whole bit. And it's like, oh, I love that old Avengers stuff. And the artwork is not letting me, it's too frenetic, and maybe that's its intention, but it's like, I can't settle into it and enjoy it for whatever the story might be under there. So I find myself just flipping through it.
I was reading, I think, before the stuff you're reading.
Well, what do you think?
It has some of the elements of, I think, what I would enjoy. But once we, like, because I was like, oh, the controller and all that stuff was going on. I'm like, all the setup, I'm like, this is pretty cool. And then we get to the actual story, and I'm like, not entirely feeling it. It's just, and then when you get into that headspace, and then you see two writers, and I'm like, you start wondering where one of them ends and the other begins, because Jim Zub comes in there. So you're kind of wondering if that's part of the, like, there's some fun gags and everything, but I think part of the problem too is they have characters that I don't care for, like some I do care for, like Machine Man's all right, Jocasta's all right, and then you have Tony's other mother,
yeah,
who's it's hard to summon a whole lot of caring for her.
I don't care about any of the Stark lineage stuff, to be honest with you.
It's such a weird thing to add on, but I guess later on you could just ignore if you wanted to. Like,
well, yeah,
it's weird when everything's in like a virtual reality, and then you have like Tony's mother, like arguing with his other mother, and like his, and then his mother is kind of right, and you're just like, yeah, I guess his mother's right, and then somehow, like his other mother still kind of wins the argument, and I'm like, but you never really said anything to refute what was happening. It was very weird AI logic and stuff like that. But they got like the theme song in there. I thought, I'm like, that's fine. I like the controller, but I don't know, this weird virtual reality thing. Remember, I was complaining too. Remember, I was saying something before about, oh, there's no stories with where there's virtual reality things. Well, this is totally that, and for some reason, I'm just not digging it.
I know one Stark relative you care about, Steve. Arno Stark.
Ugh.
I did as a future thing,
yeah.
But now that we're everything's so obviously bottlenecking towards having him be the Iron Man of 2020, because 2020 is now. I don't know. It's like, I liked it for what it was. When they even introduced, I mean, how long ago was it that they introduced Arno Stark into this continuity even?
Was that like 6 years ago, maybe?
Yeah.
That was Gillen, right?
Yeah, I almost was going to say it was Fraction, but you're right, it was Gillen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just love that.
The spiky armor, and
that's what I mean.
Like it's
the best armor.
It was very like steampunky in a way.
Yeah,
but
it's, I don't know.
And he's the real, you know, heir to the Stark intelligence and everything. And Tony's this other thing. And which one of them is the invalid? And now they've both been recloned into better bodies. And but you're two sandwiches short of a picnic. And
I kind of should have known at the beginning of the series when Tony's like, maybe I came back wrong. And then I'm just like, I'm like, you could do something with that story, but it's kind of like, Ben Reilly and Peter Parker, who's the real one? And I'm like, I'm not really my thing right now.
Agreed.
I'll probably, unless something really sparks my imagination, I'm probably out for the Iron Man 2020 event thing.
You heard it here first, folks.
Wait, so we still don't know if Ben Reilly or Peter Parker is the real Peter Parker? I thought we solved all this.
We know.
Which one of them's in the smokestack? Which one of them's in the smokestack?
Oh, no.
There was a skeleton in there, damn it. They still...
Yeah, that means we must be both fakes. That's the real one. Wow.
I still say they could rehabilitate. Look, they brought Secret Wars back. They could bring back...
Speaking of which one's the real one, I've read the first two issues of the new 5-issue Yondu limited series.
They're both real, Steve. That's the thing. They're both real.
This is written by Zach Thompson and Connie Nadler, with art by John McCrae, who we hung with at the hotel bar Saturday night after the Baltimore Comic Con a couple of months ago. It was us and John McCrae and Kirby inker Mike Royer for quite some time. Royer was quite a talker until the Waringo Awards let out, and there were more folks to talk to and mingle with and stuff. But John's a good guy, and now I like his art twice as much after hanging with him. But this Yondu thing is like trying to reconcile the whole, well, we have this Yondu from the movie, right? And
I don't mean to laugh, Steve. I'm sure it's a very serious undertaking.
And, you know, he's from now, and he's like an obnoxious pirate type, and then we have the Yondu that has existed for, what, 40 years, right? Who is the Yondu from the old Guardians of the Galaxy.
But isn't he future Yondu?
Yeah, well, that's the, even though he's the original, right? And that's what's so screwy. This thing, it's only two issues in, but it seems like it's like a Maltese Falcon-like dynamic with the movie-like Yondu and the original, but from the future, Yondu, seeking this mystical herald's urn, okay? And so this is just like the MacGuffin that they are chasing down and trying to keep a hold of, and then there's this bounty hunter who's also after the prize, and Yondu and Yondu have to come to terms with the fact that they're related and find a way to coexist and complete their mission. I don't know. It's got good art, and it's old Yondu. I was afraid they were just going to write old Yondu off the map, but here we go. We're getting to see him, and he whistles, and his arrow does things, and he criticizes the other Yondu for having cut his fin and not being connected to the, you know, hive mind, and losing all, you know, forgetting the songs and all that sort of stuff, and not having any respect for the culture, and having to deal with the fact that he's a descendant from this miserable Cretan.
So I take it at some point you think issue 5. They have to fight, and one of them has to give up the name forever.
Yep, and the other one's going to be called, I don't know.
Arrow Man?
Right.
Broken Finn?
Just Finn.
Well, that's presuming the one loses. There's no way the movie Yondu is losing, guys. Yeah, I hate to break it to you. Yeah,
as I say, it's going to be Yondu and Finn. From here forward.
But if you do want some crazy nostalgia goodness, run down to the store. It's probably in some discount bin or whatever, and get the Marvel 80s years New Mutants War Children by Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz and Chris Sotomayor. Man, this thing was just like cracking open vintage cased unopened nostalgia and pouring it right in. And I feel like I have such a fondness for the New Mutants run, the Demon Bear and all that stuff. But what I like about this is I feel like it's really, at times, and as well he should over a long run, I feel like Sienkiewicz sometimes pushed it maybe further than worked for me. But I feel like in a one-shot, his excesses are perfect for it. You know, he keeps it tied to the story. They don't have the luxury of like 10 issues or 12 issues or 20 or whatever it is to really waste half an issue or a third of an issue or whatever. And even some of the later series he did, some I liked more than others, but it's not only just for me. But this, it's the return of Warlock, which works so well with Sienkiewicz's style, and Sotomayor is the colors, and it's just a fun, like, I love the return of the, you know, thought balloons and people positioning themselves one way and the thought balloons tell their real thoughts and all the classic. Like I said, this is just for 80s fans. Like, it was a love letter if you like this stuff. The demon child of Ileana gets unleashed. Again, Sienkiewicz is a pretty good choice. And I feel like I'm sure there's some maturity on his side, too, to be reined in to always make sure you're servicing the story. And again, far be it for me to say he was being indulgent at times, but just my take on those old days is sometimes I did feel he, you know, maybe wasn't always focused on the storytelling and more on trying a few things. And, well, you should over a long series, but I really liked it. I don't know if either of you guys read this thing. but I think it fits right in. And this is the kind of nostalgia I like, where you're capturing that feel. You're not just taking the title and the characters and doing something different like that Ziggy Pig Silly Seal book, yeah. But you're getting the real thing.
This felt really like it put me in the right frame of mind of that, okay, this is a celebration of some of my golden age books. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things where it's like you can't ever go back, or you don't want to because you might not still be able to do it. They went back and totally did it, and it was like it's like reading an annual or a special from back in the day, and totally fun for them to do this.
And also loads of black in here, but unlike the Morbius book, I never felt like I was missing something or something might have been hidden or whatever. Just a brilliant job by Sotomayor. I want to say that, I mean, maybe it works better on, but this one is not one where I'm like, oh, I need to see the digital. Like, I feel everything came through great, and there's so much black. Like, whenever he does Warlock, it's all like just black shapes intruding on other black shapes and everything. But they add in those other splashes of color that offset it, or have just the white at times in the background, or the kind of atmosphere where you're like, wow, it's like a greenish bluish atmosphere, even though it's the middle of night or whatever. Like, and I'm sure you noticed, Steve, the one panel when they go into Limbo, it seemed like that was like a Ditko, a total Ditko like nod when she first, because the technovirus Warlock, for those of you that don't know, was an alien creature. It's like a robot, but he spoke in a funny way and very nice, like E.T., but it came from a terrible place, and there was this virus that would infect you and make you sort of robotic, so they're trying to avoid it and avoid being touched. So Ileana drags Sunspot into the realm, and it's just got like the weird colored backgrounds and the shapes all connected by weird tendrils and everything. And I was like, oh, that to me seemed almost like a nod to good old Mr. Ditko.
Very cool.
Andy Gush, because I feel I should, you know, if I was a little bit harsh on some of the other books, it's good to come back and give some praise. Although, like I said, I'm enjoying Mary Jane. I'm still reading it. The story just isn't really jiving.
You know what book you were harsh on in the past? And I stood up for it then, and I stuck with it and read a few more issues, and I still stand by it, is The History of the Marvel Universe.
I've been still buying them, but I haven't caught up, Steve. After you defended it, I said I'm going to keep buying it.
It's up to issue 5, written by Mark Waid, and art and color by Javier Rodriguez and Alaro Lopez. It's great. I mean, it's going to look great as a Treasury edition when it gets collected, too, because it's all one page or almost a full page panel compositions and double page spreads. And this was the very thing that I think the flow of the reading was bothering you, Andrew, was the fact that it was just these like caption boxes against these big mashup pinups of all these different, you know, mashed up moments, basically all thrown against a wall in a big collage. But that's going to look great as a Treasury edition, I think, when it's giant. And the art is really so fine that I like some of the perspectives of the panels. The Maximum Carnage page alone that shoots down Spider-Man's shoulder girdle and then has all of the crazy other heroes that were all involved all down below him with the cityscape below them. This is going to look great when it's oversized. But, you know, the conceit of this thing is that it's the Hickman era, Franklin Richards and Galactus at the last moments of the universe. And Franklin's like, tell me a story, Uncle Galen, you know. And he's going to tell him the story of the Marvel Universe just to make him feel at home. So it really, because of the fact that it's not as much of a narrative except for the, I mean, it is a narrative, but it's not a sequential storytelling so much except for the framing sequences with Galactus and Franklin. Instead, it's like looking at a beautifully illustrated timeline. you know, of this fictional history of the Marvel Universe that connects modern events with the classics from our youth and even before we were born. And page after page, you get to the next bunch of things that happened in a chunk in a row. And having been there and having spent all the time to read this stuff as it came off the shelves monthly, to zip through it and recall all this stuff in big chunks like this is really fun and nostalgic, I think. And then in the back, there's over a dozen pages of annotations that direct you to the exact issues, lavishly illustrated with panels from the original comics in the back of each issue, that I hope those go into the collected edition too, but I have a feeling that they might not, and that might be one of the you know, exclusives to getting the single issues. But I think this is a lot of fun.
Well, I kept with it partly on your recommendation, even though I haven't read it, but the other reason is I think my big issue was I don't necessarily like when they try and do the big cosmic, you know, is Eternity stronger than the Phoenix? Did that come? But like that part. And once we get past that, like I just flipped through four. You're right. It's just cool pinups of like, hey, here's the Secret Wars pinup, which leads to the Spider-Man and Venom pinup and all that. And that part's very cool. And I like, because they're not just trying to be like, oh, yeah, this whole thing all makes sense. And like this clearly, you know, the. This guy, this fundamental force is before this one and all that. So I'm glad I kept up with it. And I think you're right to just take it in as this cool pinup after pinup after pinup with, like, it's fun to see a page with like 20 different superheroes on it, Excalibur and all that. That part I like. I just don't want, I don't know. I never like it when they rank the things that I feel should be somewhat non-understandable.
And some of the things are just compositionally fun, too, that remind me of, like, remember when they had the Spider-Man, like, brain trust? They had, like, the several different writers all together working on Spider-Man, and it was coming out three times a month, right? And they're working on all these different storylines simultaneously, so they truly do know what the next bunch of storylines are going to be, or what the next year of stories are going to be, because they're actually all working on them simultaneously, rather than trying to think of, you know, soliciting a cover and now we got to think of a story to try to match it, what we solicited, that kind of stuff. And occasionally in those Spider-Man issues, they would have a big image in the back that would be a composition that would have all of these different panels of some events that are like upcoming, like over the next year in Spider-Man, you might have these different things and they would all be kind of together on the same page, like a teaser image, if you will. But these are familiar type teaser images of things that already happened in the past. I got the same feeling on some of those double page spreads where you open it up and here's all these different things that happen in Spider-Man's life over the course of several years, but it really feels like looking back in that same way that those precognitive images look ahead.
Well, like I said, I dug the Secret Wars page, and maybe that's because I just bought a carded Kang figure. But there's something for the sentimentality and having, like you say, the art team is top notch, and I'm enjoying these little slices of various cool mashups and the Strife helmet in four, where they put different images reflecting on all the different panels. Yeah, it's well done. I just didn't need those. I guess I could have skipped the first issue or so where they're trying to tell us how all that stuff goes. The Celestials come before the Kree and all that stuff.
Where does Nal go?
He's in there.
Is he?
I don't know. You want to hear about Doctor Doom? Did anyone else read Doctor Doom?
Not yet, but I want to know what it... You know, sometimes I need a catalyst to light a fire under me here.
Ooh, I don't know if I'm going to be lighting a fire exactly.
Oh, boy.
I just don't know what...
Dinner with Silver Sable? Is that it, Kevin?
I just don't know what to think. Some of those things are like that right now, right? Like, you want to be uncomfortable or unsettled or things to happen, but at the same time, you're just like, ooh, you're like squirming in your seat a little bit, going, "Oh man, I hope this turns out right." Like Silver Sable's going to be kind of in that spot too, where it's like there was a retcon and a retcon of a retcon, and you're like, I don't know, it's weird. And then like Doom and her had this thing, and now I don't know, and it's weird. Something's unsettling me about this Doom book, and I'm not quite sure what it is. There's also something weird with the storytelling too, because you're like, does this take place at different points in time? Like, there's weird stuff going on, and you're like, I'm not quite sure how to reconcile everything in here. Anyways, this is by Christopher Cantwell, with art by Salvador LaRocca and Guru EFX. So obviously, LaRocca can draw some Doom. I think that's been proven in the past, so I wasn't really concerned about that part. Although it just does look different than... It's been like what? It's been... Yeah. It's probably been a long time since he's... Like he did some Doom, but he did some Fantastic Four, so...
Right, the Heroes Return stuff.
Yeah, so this isn't like exactly the same as that Doom, but I still know he can do some Doom. And this is kind of after the... remember they had the whole thing where he saved the universe in Secret Wars, and then he went off and did that pseudo-hero stuff? And then he came back in the Fantastic Four book. And then this sort of has, like, a MacGuffin being introduced that, you know, it's like it's not gonna be successful, because you introduce something and you're like, oh, this would change the world or separate like the Marvel universe too much from our world, so it's probably not gonna happen. But it's just there, and then you, of course, something goes on and you're like, oh, Doom's being framed and all this stuff, and I'm like, that is so weird. like, who's going to frame Dr. Doom? Seems like the guy you wouldn't want to frame. So there's stuff like that that's weird in here, and I'm just like, okay. But then you have, like, Kang showing up for, like, a visit, and then I'm like, okay. Is, like, that's weird. Is something weird going on here? I'm like, I don't know. But I enjoy when Kang and Doom hang out and everything. Like, I always enjoy that type of stuff. So that's fun.
Has Doom gotten to the point where he's above, like, hiring Luke Cage to go out and, you know, help him beat his rap?
I don't know, because you could almost...
Like, I've been framed.
Right now that they could team up, right?
Well, you like, know, he's been framed.
For all I know, they already teamed up in some Bendis book, and it was hilarious. I don't know.
Like, my hands are tied. I need to, you know, be on the lam here or sit in the cell, whichever he chooses to do, whether he's cooperating or not. And he's going to need an agent to go out there and, you know, bust some heads and dig up some info and find the evidence that's going to free him. And he has a working relationship with Luke Cage, so...
What would make that perfect, Steve, is he uses the time platform to get Luke Cage from 1976 to show up.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Now that's the Luke Cage unleashed in the Marvel Universe today that would kick some ass.
There's weird scenes in here where, like, Doom is, like, with a family or something. I'm like, what? What is happening? Like, side by side with, like, I guess modern day stuff. I don't know how to describe it exactly.
Oh boy.
It's just weird. But anyways, word gets out that like Doom is like wanted and everything. So it's like Union Jack shows up to beat up Dr. Doom, and I'm like, that's some nice Union Jack.
So is this like, you know, the famous old Stan Lee quote that he would do over and over again regarding Doom is the whole thing of, like, you know, well, the great thing about Doom is, you know, there's nothing really illegal about wanting to rule the world, right? You know, that's not really breaking any crimes, you know. But these writers and editors sit around and say, you know, oh, what if Doom did commit a crime, and then they come after him with the law here.
I feel like this is more like maybe it's more like the Thunderbolts. Remember when Baron Zemo was like, I'm going to save the world and everything. And he had his good face on and everything. But Captain America just couldn't believe that he was a good guy now.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel like this is like Doom's like, yeah, I'm doing something good. I got this hero thing going on. And then, unless he has really done something, but, like, I can't tell.
Cap just wouldn't shake his hand.
I know. And then, of course, Zemo's face got screwed up again. And, you know, so, I don't know. Like, Doom seems honorable enough in here. So, it's a little weird.
Doom is the best because the next writer can always be like, and that was just a Doom bod. <We're done. laughs> Like, he is the funnest character to reset with the whole, oh, you thought that was Doom? Oh, no. He was in his secret lair plotting this. That was all a Doom bot. Next.
Yeah, but sometimes you're like, oh, but I really like this story. Like, you wanted that to be, like, I don't know. Sometimes it can get annoying.
Yeah, but you I don't know. Maybe like that Doom bot. That's fine.
I don't know. Maybe it'll just be like Doom. Is this going to be find out like who this dude was in this title and just rain down chaos upon whoever betrayed him or whatever? I don't know.
He was my favorite Doom bot.
Or maybe at the end of an issue, like you thought that was Doom, and then Doom will just be like, oh, this puny thing, and then he'll just rip the head off of this other Doom that you thought was Doom, and they go, no, I'm Doom. And you're like, whoa!
Yeah, that was whoever came up with that was the genius of like, I'm going to help out all future comic book writers for the rest of time, you know? What we need, Steve, to fix the Marvel U is a Thanos bot.
Yeah, well, Starlin did that, remember? When he came back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
He did that. Funny. Hey,
just too many stories. I don't know. It's like, oh, remember that all the Dr. Doom you were about 30 years? None of those were Doom. I'm like, that's, I don't know. Sometimes you go back too far and you're like, that just, you just wiped out an entire history there. Sometimes, I don't know. But anyways, that's getting off course.
I read the Jason Aaron, Stefano Caselli Avengers issues 21 through 25 that covered the Ghost Rider stuff. I mean, Jason Aaron touching upon the new driving around in the, you know, Charger, you know, vehicle Ghost Rider and trying to make that jive with the Ghost Rider mythos that he set up years ago when he handled the Ghost Rider and the and Danny Ketch and the whole War on Heaven and all that stuff. I was like, all right, this could be interesting. And it's the first post-War of the Realms Avengers storyline. And there's a new Ghost Rider series that just started up. So I'm like, I better get to this before I hit the Ghost Rider issues and, you know, get a sense of what they're trying to do with the character here and kind of where things stand. And the Avengers now, since the War of the Realms, you got Cap, Thor, and Iron Man, right? The big three. And then you have a few familiar faces in Captain Marvel, in She-Hulk, and Black Panther.
Yeah.
And then kind of the X-Factors of this new Avengers team have been the Robbie Reese Ghost Rider, you know, the one who drives the car, and Blade, the vampire hunter. And he's got like a parrot on his shoulder. He's got this like hunk of man thing that they call Boy Thing. And then for support, they've got Brew, the intelligent brood, benevolent brood character from the Jason Aaron Wolverine and the X-Men stuff. And Gorilla Man as support. And they're in their headquarters. That's a big defunct celestial sitting up there in the Arctic. And they're now catching their breath after the War of the Realms. And they've got some of the team investigating this cave in Turkey. And the other guys are finally getting to addressing the elephant in the room that they've been touching upon here and there, but not getting to, and then the whole War of the Realms happened, and now they're finally getting to it. What the heck the deal is with this Ghost Rider and this car, right? And like you were saying was fun about the New Mutants book, Andrew, is thought balloons.
Yes.
We got thought balloons here, and used quite well, where you get to see some of Thor's insecurities, still feeling that at any moment he might reach over and try to pick up that hammer and he's going to be unworthy again because of something he did. And you get to see She-Hulk kind of giving people lip service while really thinking they're, you know, she could barely tolerate what's happening under her breath. So they want to exercise the Ghost Rider's vehicle because it's been acting up lately. It's been acting, you know, not under Robbie's control, as if he really ever had control over it. So they call in for the exorcism. They call in Damien Hellstorm, or Hellstrom, depending on whether you're using his secret identity or not. Not that it matters now, because he's like bald and he looks all elfy and he's got like a goatee. He looks like the Krampus, for Pete's sake.
Boo, I want the super hot with the shirt off guy.
Yep, Don Perlin all the way. All those, you know, the rich orange locks with the cowtail. No, that's all gone.
The big trident.
The trident, I think he still got. But so what happens, everything goes bad during the exorcism, and Robbie gets transported to hell, where the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider currently sits on the throne. It's like, what, Strong Guy isn't in charge anymore?
No. You got his soul back.
And Blaze challenges Robbie to a race, right? That's what Ghost Riders to do. And Robbie's like, I'm not going to race you. I don't even want to be the Ghost Rider. Why would I want to race you for the mantle of Ghost Rider or whatever? And Blaze is a real jerk. He says, well, if you don't, he threatens his little brother. All right. And so along the way during the race, Robbie gets stalled out and he meets a horde of past Ghost Riders who give him a pep talk and send him back in there, you know, and then he puts on a few moves and gets a little bit of the upper hand on Blaze, and it's back and forth and back and forth. And meanwhile, the Avengers back at their celestial headquarters, it's possessed and they're trying to fight it with Hellstrom and everything, and Boy Thing saves them because the big celestial starts getting animated and the Man Thing, Boy Thing makes like a internal skeleton and holds it in place against the paranormal forces that are inhabiting it. And you know what's inhabiting it is the soul of the cosmic Ghost Rider. What? Isn't that a little convenient? But I guess like Jason Aaron, he wants the last word on all things Ghost Rider here. So he's bringing it all in and trying to make sense of it. And the cosmic Ghost Rider, Johnny Blaze, locked him in the trunk of Robbie's car, and that's why it was acting up, and he was trying to escape, and now that he's escaped, that's what made Avengers Mansion go crazy, and now he's going to fight the Avengers for a little while just to see that happen, which is fun, and there's all kinds of little moments in there that are entertaining. And then they decide to team up and head to hell to help Robbie and rescue him for the big issue 25 finale.
You know, I think the old Ghost Rider should have been like a pit crew instead. He pulls in, you know, one guy does the tires, the other guy does the gasoline, awesome. Go, 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 go. And they're like, but I don't get that because like, so the horse guy is probably screwed in the race. I'm taking it. I think, don't cars go faster than motorcycles? I'm not a car guy, but I would think their inherent nature would dictate their speed more than their speed. You know what I mean?
Blaze has a line about that.
Like, either cars are faster.
Blaze has a line about that. He says something along the line of, you're the Ghost Rider who brought a tank to a motocross race because the landscape, the course in hell greatly benefits the two-wheeled rider.
I again, no motorcycle expert, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't a motocross bike that Johnny Blaze. Like, I thought it was a big old one of them American muscle bikes.
Yeah.
Like that he rode in the old days. But as we've established, Andy is not keeping up very well with the latest and greatest trends in the Marvel U. So maybe they have put him on some little Kawasaki motocross bike.
I like the idea of them being like being the pit crew, though, and like giving them a pit talk while they're like spitting on his windshield and wiping it off. That'd been awesome.
Yeah. One guy's got the microphone like he's the crew chief and everything. All right, kid, you're running low on gas.
You need to
power into the curves and let up on the drive.
He's weak. He's weak on his left side. What bothers me, though, is the portrayal of Blaze. I mean, he's really the bad guy here. He brings Robbie's parents to hell and threatens them. He reanimates Robbie's evil Uncle Eli into the husk of another dead celestial, and so he's like an unstoppable force. I mean, he's not nice. The Avengers help Robbie win in the end, of course. And then Blaze, like, retro explains it all, saying that he had just wanted to win all the power of the Ghost Rider so he could be the strongest of all to fight Mephisto. And it's like, well, then why don't you, like, say that? And it was just kind of weird. It was all convenient and really doesn't explain his behavior throughout this whole storyline. But it
Steve,
is what it is.
You have to learn in Marvel Comics, circus folk are bad people. They're just no good. The circus of crime, the circus of motorcycle stunts, you're just always a bad guy.
Are you sure you didn't read this? Because he even says that. I was born a carny. I was his. He has this whole speech. I've been putting bikes together. I built my first bike when I was 13, whatever. So now...
What would that woman say? His little girlfriend there.
Roxanne?
She must be pretty bummed out. Yeah.
I don't think things ended well. I think she got Karen Paged. if I remember correctly.
Oh, ooh. So she's up in heaven now looking down. I'm surprised there wasn't an appeal to that. Or maybe they're going to threaten to get the guy with the big eye on his head to come after him.
We've got the new Ghost Rider series, too. I did dive into the beginning of that to see what they're going to do out from this. And it's the two issues have been out so far. And it's written by Ed Brisson, whose stuff I really like, with art by Aaron Cooter, who draws a really fine Ghost Rider, I got to say. Although, already by the second issue, he had to have like three other artists helping him out. The issue starts this, or the series starts with Johnny dealing with quelling various revolts of like Mephisto loyalists, and some demons have escaped hell, so he decides to chase them down personally. So now you have him, you know, in New York, like walking around, and he's misunderstood and maybe acting a little too hellish and crazy, and they've got this new faction who's angling to like try to take over while he's gone, take over hell. And then there's Danny Ketch, who is trying to put his life together as the owner of a pub and, you know, staying drunk on his own supply while he's doing it. And he doesn't see the demons like Johnny does. So he thinks Johnny's just going crazy, and he tries to put Johnny down, and he's getting in Johnny's way and stuff. It's like the Rom Dyer Wrath misunderstanding dynamic thing going on, where people aren't who they say they are, and I know, and here I am taking care of this demon, and no, that just looks like it's a grocer, you know?
I always like that. Maybe he can meet up with Brandy and have a new romance. Although I do think the next Ghost Rider, guys, should be someone who's super environmental. And he's always concerned about, like, the emissions that the Ghost Rider vehicle and, like, worried that the fires are causing problems. And like, because they're always, like, gearhead, into it. Like, I want to see the one who's not worried about the, like, metaphysical danger, but, like, is this good for the environment?
Or if they use it like metaphorical, so it's like they come up with this whole like mystical environment that's being globally warmed, right? Because I'm using
every time hellfire is used.
Yeah. Oh, geez. It's an allegory. Fresh as today's headlines, Andrew.
See, I got all the ideas free for Marvel themes. Quality comic book suggestion. I'm like 5 or 10 in this podcast alone.
You're on fire.
You guys have any other books, or should we wrap up this episode?
Did you Immortal Hulk 25? I don't remember.
That's right where I'm at is like 24, 25 and beyond.
25 is pretty mind-blowing.
Let me move them from the top of my stack after that.
Well, I don't want to bog it down too much, but I do want to say I do keep my eyes out, and I pick up some of these fun things because they're so cheap. So I did get the X-Men Betsy Braddock True Believers, and I understand if people want to skip this stuff, but I feel like they're so cheap it's sometimes fun just to grab like a crazy impulse buy. Not, and I don't get many of them. Like, I usually let them go, but once in a while you're feeling like, I got a couple extra bucks.
Wait, the True Believers are like the dollar issues.
Yeah, that's a dollar one.
Old reprints that they redo, right? Well, I like these.
Well, not necessarily old.
Well, when I get them through DCBS with the discount, they're like 60 cents, right? So I try to get a few each month that I think that maybe would still be, aren't too stuck in their time and might be still relevant or kids might enjoy them. And I put them in a box of like free comics that whenever any of my kids' friends are over or whatever, I say, hey, there's a box of free comics, flip through them or whatever. And I like the presentation of them because when you flip through, the ads are all modern. So it's all nice, colorful things referring to other comics and storylines and graphic novels and things. So there's a lot to catch a new reader's eye in there.
And this one I thought was clever because it's pulling like an anthology serial and putting it together, which makes it fun, which made it fun rather than like pulling out the 3 or 4 issues of Captain Britain this came from, which I think I only have 1 or 2 of these issues. Any, you know, it's nice to have it just in a fun little dollar format to flip through. And it's just, these are fun, always fun books half the time. As Kevin said, not some of the 90s stuff I haven't really jumped on with quite the same vim and vigor, but I enjoyed
some of it. Was even reprinting like the early 2000s because I needed to get some of that Venom material out there.
Yeah.
And I also like, because I assume this means now it's going to be on Marvel Unlimited as well, but I just wanted to encourage Marvel that I'm finding them fun. They're completely non-essential, though. So if your budget's really tight, I would say don't. Like, just read this on Unlimited or whatever. But if you got a couple bucks...
If your budget's tight, they're a dollar.
If your budget's tight, you should be reading this stuff on Unlimited. It's not...
So.
It's not going anywhere, and you should be buying, like, the indie books you really like, to be honest. But
another indie comic book noise plug.
I know, right? We can tell where his heart is.
But I do say that if you have, you know, sometimes, for instance, I also bought, this will make Kevin happy. I thought I already had it, but I wasn't sure. So I'm like, oh, do I need to get another X-Men number one? And there was the Art Germ variant, which I thought would look so nice. I was like, dang it, I don't care. $5. I was feeling kind of spend thrifty, like I had extra money in my pocket. So I bought the variant. Wow. With the Marvel Girl one. I'm like,
the one I don't have.
I'm like, $5 is...
Envious, Andrew.
It's a lot for a comic that I probably already had. Spoiler, Andy already did have it. But every once in a while, that's another thing I'll look at. I'll look at, like, maybe one of these dollar books or dropping $5 on a variant, although that seems a little wasteful, I know. And I would say not to do it to people whose budgets are tight. But I figure it keeps the business going, you know?
Yeah. But the other thing, this is bad, when your mind finds you excuses to spend more money and stuff. You're like, if you saw that as a print for $20, would you buy that? Or people buy prints. And I'm like, that is true, brain. And then my brain's like, but this is only $5. And I'm like, that is true.
I just was really struck. Like, I like his his stuff I generally like, but once in a while he has one, and I'm like, you know that really, the composition, everything, it just, I saw it on the wall, and I was like, is that the same price? He's like, yeah, $5. I'm like, sold. Because, you know, I'm always worried about grabbing, and he's like, I don't put the 1 in 500 ones on the, the wall up. I'm like, good. Because, you know, you don't want to be the guy grabbing the one, and they're like, that'll be $900. Like, but I, as I think I've said before, I'm actually a fan of all that. Anything that helps the comic book store guy stay in business is good for you. Because if he makes $600 on that comic book, that means he's paying his rent and his lights. Like, you want your comic book shop guy to be in business. And if he's making that money off someone else, that means I get my books with a nice discount because he's able to flip some weird books or whatever. So I know it can be frustrating, but I'm a supporter of shops and things that do what they have to do to stay alive. Yeah. 'Cause
we had one of the biggest shops in the area close in recent months, and up in Saratoga, real nice store too. And a new owner took it over when they thought it was going to close last year, and then it's closing again. It's like, yeah.
It's time for you to step in, Steve. New job.
Whoa, the bunker. The bunker gets upgraded.
And the bunker's getting an extra lock on it.
You can literally call it the bunker, too.
The bunker, oh, too. Oh, jeez.
You would get so much. Look, think of all the advertising you've been subtly doing for years now online, Steve. Super Steve's bunker. Man, you get the DC guys with that whole Super Steve, and you get the bunker to get the Marvel guys.
Come gather around in the bunker. Let Steve tell you a story. Spin you a yarn.
Get a Marvel noise playing.
While I spit on your windshield and wipe it off. Like the Ghost Rider.
I'll probably not talk about it, but just a quick, I did pick up White Fox and Luna Snow, and I'm still trying that stuff too. So, thumbs up on that.
How is that stuff? I mean, what is that stuff? It's just like doing Greg Pak a favor, or what is it?
They generally do that two story where it's the adaption of something, and then the new thing. I mean, they're not all that way, but that seems to be what they're doing. And it's a good way to introduce these characters. My problem is, to be honest, if you read a bunch of them together, they blur a little bit too close together, especially the covers. Like, the White Fox and Luna Snow cover I have are both almost the same. It's the protagonist character in a bust with their hand up. And, like, one on the list and the other just has the finger out. And I'm like, I know that's how the new way, and then same, that was going to be the Crescent Eye. And I guess the idea is, you know, you gin them all together or whatever into forming a fun thing. But I think Marvel would have been better trying to distinguish these instead of relying on idiots like me or just like, oh, I'll try number one of everything. Maybe try to more distinguish each one so that, hey, instead of having these all live or fail, maybe you could show why each one's different and then get the potential fans to buy the ones they want rather than idiots like me that just buy number ones. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
There's nothing from this cover to show what the difference between White Fox and Luna Snow is. Like, they're both winnery sort of themes.
Yeah, Kevin, nice I feel like though.
They are, but you know what I mean? You can disagree, but what do you think about?
No, so it's while they're thinking that they're complementary to each other and you're going to buy two, in a way they're also competing against each other. You know what I mean? If you're being frugal, because they seem like more of the same.
Yes, and I feel that the other issue might be like, oh, it's just, it might be easier to dismiss them as like, oh, it's just some Marvel trying to get some new stuff, where if they focused on why these, because they're all different characters with different stories, oftentimes different countries even, so they could, I think by having the cover more reflect of like, oh, you know, White Fox might have this, you know, the kind of intrigue that you want, and Luna Snow might be the kind of pop singer, K-pop, get kids into that type of thing. might be an appeal you could do. You know, do you like Dazzler or whatever? Well, this is like a modern take. And if you like Black Widow, maybe White Fox is more, you know, that kind of pitch that you can get quickly by looking at a cover rather than getting a nice cover image. For I feel for new like old characters, we know who all them are, but these are at least I only read them in that Agents Atlas stuff. Kevin, did you know them from other stuff?
You mean comic book stuff? Because they do appear outside of comic books.
Either way, I don't know them from outside of comics either.
Like, I don't know them from outside of comics, but yeah, I only saw them in the Agents of Atlas. I think maybe because they're one-shots, like, they just went with that too. Like, if it was more like Arrow or Swordmaster, you sort of get more variety of things going on.
Yeah. Oh, I could see that, I guess. I don't know. I just feel like you have a shot to maybe catch something on fire and maybe leaning into what makes them... Like, the one I missed that I need to go get because I didn't make it to the shop was the IO and the bear one because that visually was interesting to me. So I like it when they play into what elements... And like I said, if you like K-pop, well, then it seems like you might think that Luna Snow, it's pretty cool to have... Lord knows I've had plenty of rock singers, Lena Faney and Dazzler, and they've done the music thing from that way, so why not a different musical star?
I get you. All right, let's make that an episode of Marvel Noise. Sorry it took us so long to get our act together, but now that we're on the stage again, just try kicking us off. So we'll try to get some more episodes out to you as soon as we can.
And start working on your best of lists or your best of decade lists or stuff of that nature.
Oh, Kevin's producing a segment.
Wait. Is the year over already?
It's getting there. Getting there. All right, until there's nothing but movie-derived versions of characters left, make mine Marvel. Later.
Oh, man. Means the show's got about 3 years left.
Wow. That was grim.
The clock is ticking.
As holly breaks and ivy clings, your fate is none too clear. The Lord may find you wanting, let your good fortune disappear. All homely comforts blown away and all that's left to show is to share your joy at Christmas time with Jack Frost and the Hooded Crow. Through long December nights we talk in words of rain or snow, while you through chattering teeth reply and curse us as you go. Why not spare a thoughtless day for those who have no flame to warm their bones at Christmas time? Say Jack Frost and the Hooded Crow.